Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, positively back on the grid. And it's this close to April, and it's baseball season, and here we go. We're going to be doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour beginning next Friday at Fadley's at Lexington Market, the real one. They are opening the Fishmonger's Daughter soon, like by the end of the month. By the time the Ravens have a five game, or the Orioles have a five game lead in the AL East. They'll be open over at in Catonsville to Fishmonger's Daughter. Meanwhile, we'll be there next Friday. The San Francisco Giants, Gigantes, will be in town. Luke doesn't even know it yet, but I did have a commitment from Stephen L. Miles to come down and talk some baseball and law and some fun with me next Friday. So we'll talk about it next week as well. So I love Steve. Steve's one of my lifer friends. So and he's never been on the show, which is even crazier. This guy's on a lot. You like him more than you like me, most of you anyway, especially after the weekend. P.S. He should still be in prison, under a prison. He's a pedophile. Hi, Brandon Carr. Luke Jones is here, and Luke Jones spent the weekend at Oriole Park at Camden Yards, which was summer on Thursday, winter on Saturday, and the Bats had a spring on Sunday. Did they not, Luke Jones?
Yeah, that was pretty good. And also, I will say, and you know me,
I
I'm
didn't
not.
write that down, by the way. You know how to write this
That
stuff
was
down.
quite good.
I wrote it
I
down,
will
it'd be
say
better.
this, and you know I'm someone who doesn't like to talk too much from the media experience standpoint because I don't think a lot of people care about it, quite frankly.
Is the
But
food better in the press box?
no,
No, okay, all right,
the food's a totally different story, and
okay.
I've packed every day
Relax.
for years anyway. But the windows that close now in the new press box. Very much appreciated that on Saturday. I absolutely will say that. But
What were you wearing for the game Saturday inside the newly heated? Did they still call it the Henneman press box? You stole
they
his name.
do. They
Okay.
do. And they have a picture of Henny up right where you
Were
walk
you
in.
wearing
So
that Farnan and Dermer a sweatshirt? Was that good enough on a 42-degree day? Or
you know what? I still had a sweatshirt because they didn't have the heat cranking, it felt fine in there, right? With the windows closed, it felt fine. So,
well, Craig
yeah.
Thompson's got to send him the bill. So
So,
yeah, we'll do that.
but yes, Saturday was it was pretty brisk. Someone told me, I did not see an official list or anything like that. Someone told me that was one of the colder games in the history of the ballpark, which, you know, I believe it was in the 40s. But yeah, kind of strange that you get the weather that you got on Thursday. It's very cold Saturday. And then Sunday was pleasant. One or two of the windows were open in the press box, but
Well, after the debacle on Saturday and they lost and it wasn't good, I thought to myself, maybe Bradish is like Cuellar. Maybe he's just not a 42-degree pitcher because there aren't a whole lot of guys that are.
yeah, I mean it wasn't just that. And then on the flip side with the offense, I mean the shadows were rough too.
Oh, awful.
And let's face it, like don't get me wrong, I'm not going to sit here and say Taj Bradley is a Cy Young Award winning pitcher or anything like that. But he throws 100. So when you're talking about the shadows and someone that's throwing hard for the opposition, I'm not excusing it, but I do understand why they had the issues they had on Saturday. But good to see them get a series win. I described Sunday as very laborious. I think it was very much a grind. I mean, not only did they fall behind 4-0, but just back and forth. And certainly the concerns about the bullpen were not eased in any fashion on Sunday, that's for sure. But hey, it's a series win. They didn't get their first series win till mid-April last year. So you'll take it. It wasn't perfect. They had their issues in every phase of the game at some point over the course of the weekend, but it was good enough. And they got a win and they got a series win. And you don't apologize for that. And I think the nice thing is they're not exactly firing on all cylinders just yet, but they still found a way to win 2 out of 3. And that's saying something, especially the way you and I talked going into this series, going into the season, saying, hey, this team needs to get off to a good start. So they won on opening day. They get a series win. Plenty to talk about, plenty to unpack, including the ABS system,
That's its
which
own,
is
like,
its
we're
own
gonna have to do an
conversation.
hour on that, you and me. And
Well, I mean,
I've
but
already recruited Alan, every baseball person. It's the first time in our relationship in at least 20 years where I've been texting all of my baseball people. Mark Messina, Alan McCallum, Eric Fisher, everybody you hear on the air with me, these people, I like them and they like me, all of them, all of these guests. Like, but
yeah.
we don't flirt much. We don't text much during rando June games about how Bradish looked or what. We don't text about baseball in the way that, like, it used to be the biggest part of my life, Luke. I
Yep.
know you don't know that part of me because I'm an old, angry, get off my lawn guy now. But like, I used to be with the roto groups back in the day, and like every night. And Mark Messina was my roommate, eat pizza all night and up watching baseball all night and deciding who were the loop leaders were. Like, there was a real culture for baseball to do that. But the ABS thing kind of like, I started texting people I know. I'm like, this is revolutionary. Just watching Sunday's game, it was like watching a game I've never watched before. It was like watching like a fun version of baseball.
Yeah, I think for me, beyond the obvious, getting more calls correct, right? Beyond the, by the way, Kevin Brown saying that Derek Shelton, you can't argue with the robots. I mean, just phenomenal line right there. I mean, absolutely brilliant. But the aesthetics of it, what other forum in professional team sports has something happen where the players, the coaches, the umpires themselves, or the officials themselves, the fans, and the media are all on the same footing, albeit just for a few moments, watching a screen, waiting for the correct call to be revealed in terms of whether the call is confirmed or whether it is overturned. The aesthetics are wild.
To promote Keno and my friends at the Maryland Lottery, it reminds me when I'm sitting in Costas and I'm wearing my Coco shirt,
You know what? That's
the
interesting.
little
Yeah.
ball pops up and
Yeah.
you're like, did I win or did I not?
That's
It's
actually really,
literally
yeah.
like a lottery ball.
It's such a fast, and I do want to say this. I do want, before I make a final judgment on it, I think right now there's the novelty part of it right now. So that can cloud evaluation a little bit, but it's wild, man. I mean,
In
we
the
talk.
eighth inning of a World Series game, it's going to be very wild.
Forget the eighth inning, the ninth inning with two outs. I mean, look at what happened in Sunday's game with just the controversy over Ryan Helsley tapping his head, and he taps his head, goes to the brim of his cap, and then taps it again. He tapped it on. I mean, there was no controversy,
There's
Derek.
there should
I'm
be no
guessing.
controversy on that.
I'm guessing Derek Shelton didn't see the first tap. But as I wrote in my 12 Orioles thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com, who would have imagined if someone had told you a few days ago or a few years ago that the simple padding of a pitcher's cap would prompt a managerial ejection. It just speaks to, wow, we're in new territory. We're not in Kansas anymore as it comes to baseball. But we talked about this with the pitch timer, the pitch clock a few years ago, how obviously the pace, the timing of the game, you were able to speed that up markedly. But the aesthetics of the game itself, other than just the pitchers working more quickly, didn't really change it, right? We could talk about the effects, we could talk about pitcher health, things like that, but the game itself still largely remained the same, to the point that you and I and baseball fans don't even pay attention to the clock. Like, it's completely in the background now. You have a violation once every other game, maybe every three games. It's not very often, but with this. And Sunday was a little more extreme. I don't think you're going to have 10 challenges every single game, and we saw
But
that
when you have
play
bad
out.
umpiring, you will.
But there's also the tactical part of this. Teams need to be strategic. Players need to be unemotional about it. I mean, the Twins themselves were guilty of a challenge late in the game where, like, look, man, you can call a challenge with two outs in the ninth if it's a called third strike in that situation, but I mean, that pitch he was rung up on was clearly a strike. I mean, he wasted his last challenge and then his team didn't have that then. So you do have to be intentional about how you go about it. Teams have to be strategic. Any teams that did not or are not having ongoing meetings about how to use the system, you're doing yourself a disservice because the last thing you want to do is be in a position where you've exhausted your two challenges in the fourth inning and then the rest of the way, you're at the mercy of the umpire, right?
It is
Where,
not a small thing.
so
This is not a small, subtle change to the game. It's a big change.
it's really fascinating. And I think the teams that are more strategic about it and more intentional about the how they want to use them, when they want to use them, and the players themselves who are really good at doing it, I think catchers are going to be the ones over time who most likely are the most successful. But man, The teams and the individual players that are really good at using the challenges and knowing when and how, there's absolutely going to be an edge created there. I mean, I'm not going to say it's dramatic, but it's real. It's real,
It
absolutely.
turned
So
walks into strikeouts and strikeouts into walks in one game. It flipped the game. It flipped the game situation. And by the way, after the booted ball out in center field, or not booted ball, but he lost the ball in
lost
the
in the
lights.
sun. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I said light, sun. You're right.
It's still the
Correct.
light, yeah.
But either way, that tag, that phantom tag at shortstop, the fact that that wasn't challengeable is kind of weird to me because he didn't tag him. And it cost them a run. It cost Twins a run at the end.
Oh,
Yeah, I
you're talking about going se I sorry, I thought
second to
you
third, second to
yeah, second to
third,
third,
the
yeah.
swipe tag.
Yeah, that was odd. Yeah, I mean they said it was out of the baseline, but it's
He was
yeah.
not out of the
No.
baseline, and the dude was holding the ball in his hand and had his
Yeah.
glove forward.
Yeah.
Even if he hit him with a glove, he didn't have the ball.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have plays that don't, we're not going to be perfect because I don't think anyone wants perfection as far as what it would cost, right? I mean, I've said this for
I think
years.
they're going to wind up having a third challenge in the end.
They
I think
might.
there'll be three for a team like timeouts in the NFL or
Yeah.
timeouts in
I
an
don't
NBA
know.
game.
I still don't know if we go full automation at some point,
Full
but.
automation, then you can't challenge anything.
Well, there's that, and that also then it really takes away an important skill that catchers possess right now in terms of presentation and framing and all that. So you would eliminate that entirely. I don't know. Again, I think it'd be a little too hasty to make definitive judgments right now, but so far so good. There's no doubt about that, and
It's
it's
enhanced the experience of watching the game.
yeah. So and it's not just, I mean, you think about it in terms of a lot of strike three and ball four, but I don't know, man. Like, you look at numbers, the difference between a 2-1 count and a 1-2 count. I mean, and not necessarily that someone's going to challenge a 1-1 pitch in the third inning, but when you get in the seventh or eighth inning, I mean, look at Pete Alonso when he challenged. It was earlier in the count when he ended up flipping the ball into right field for the RBI, but. Those are situations. I mean, count leverage is huge. You hear these in this day and age in baseball with analytics and the way that front offices and coaching staffs and even the way players think about the game. I mean, you hear the term count leverage, which has always been there, but it just sounds a little fancier to hear it in those terms. But they all talk about it. So the idea that you have a system in place that could turn a 1-1 pitch. That's called a ball into a strike or vice versa. I mean, it's major. That's absolutely major. So it'll be interesting to see in the long run whether this potentially helps offense tick up. Oh, but because pitchers aren't necessarily going to be able to count on getting those 2 extra inches off the plate in certain situations late in the game where it tends to feel that way that they
I
do.
can see Greg Maddux getting a challenge now back in the day
Yeah, so who knows? So,
with the
but
preferred strike zone.
so I don't want it. There was still plenty of interesting baseball putting that aside, but man, we talked about it throughout the spring, and it's one thing to see it in a spring training game when it's just the test run. It's just the trial run for all these guys testing
I
it
would
out,
call it
but
cute in spring training. It
yeah.
is, it's beyond cute now. It's unbelievably strategic.
It's
And
crazy.
I don't know if you exhumed Earl Weaver, Casey Stengel, or Billy Martin, or Tommy Lasorda right now and said this, how they would view it. It would be fascinating to me to see what Whitey Herzog would think of this. And it's fascinating to hear what Jim Palmer thinks about
Yeah.
it to me on a nightly
Yeah.
basis.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really, I mean, it's again, I want to let it breathe for a while and really see one, the
But it
flow of the
came to life
game.
Sunday. It,
Oh,
the
there's
reason
no
we're talking
doubt.
about it right now is it is breathing for
Well,
sure.
and the big thing with this for the umpires, hey, there's more accountability for them now. And part of that, going back to you made the Greg use the Greg Maddux example. If you're an umpire, like, that the tap on the head's coming if it's a borderline pitch. So the idea that, over the years, and we all remember this. Certain umpires who are a little more pitcher friendly, certain umpires who are a little more hitter friendly. I mean, there's scouting reports on these guys over the years for years. I mean, that's pre-analytics. I mean, Earl Weaver knew who was behind the plate on any given night and what that kind of night was going to be most likely. But now, like I said, it's going to be fascinating to see how, what the trickle down effect of this is in terms of how the umpires call the games, how players handle these challenges. So
Well, you're old
it's
enough to
very
remember the old
interesting.
chest protectors, right? Outside chest protectors in one league, inside in the other. You got the low strike in the National League. You didn't get it in the American League because umpires saw it differently because of the chest protector, right?
No doubt. Well, I mean, there was that, the umpires who sat, who set up right behind the catcher or on the first base side or a little bit on the third. I mean, there was all of those intricacies, but now there's a definitive system in place. And now it's standardized, right? I mean, they measure all the players the same way, but all of that. There's no complaining about that. Derek Shelton can complain about Ryan Helsley not tapping his cap quickly enough, but in terms of the calls themselves, there is no arguing with the robots. So it's very
Just
interesting
when
in
they
that
measure
way.
you, you try to crouch up a little bit, bend
Right,
over a little
right.
bit, get a
So,
smaller strike zone.
yeah, I mean, it, but no, they have to. They
I'm
literally.
sure.
Oh no, they literally put. Yeah,
Put
they
them against the
all.
wall.
They have no shoes on. They measure them standing straight. Like it's very like it's. They try to standardize it. There was even I forget who mentioned this. It was some spring training game I was watching. It might not have even been the Orioles. They actually talked about the idea that they actually would do the measurements in the morning. Because there's even scientific evidence or data that says that your height can change ever so slightly over the course of the day, which I don't know if that's true or not. Sounded good though. So, but they've tried to standardize it. They've tried to do make this as consistent as they can, and we're going to find out, right? I mean, there are going to be some calls that go against your team. There are going to be some calls that help your team. But I think having talked to Pete Alonso and Tyler O'Neill after Sunday's game specifically, you definitely sense the play. I think the players overall very much, I think they appreciate it and I think they like where this is going. Again, I want to see it over the course of weeks, not just a few games, over the course of months, not just a few weeks of games. But man, it's certainly getting people talking, and I think it's getting them talking in a positive way rather than something where. Like for example, when we talk about challenge system, whether the NFL, baseball, whenever, when you have these long replay reviews, I mean, even the Blaze Alexander slide at second base, kind of looked on replay like he wasn't tagged. I don't know if it was 100% definitive, but it sure looked like he wasn't tagged, and the call ends up standing. Less of that and more of the swift, definitive, hey, it's a ball, it's a strike, and then move on. I think that's nothing but a positive as long as it's not going to slow down the game. And, we're only talking about a couple seconds here and there when the challenges do occur.
He's Luke Jones. I'm Nestor. We are into baseball season around here. We'll get to some football. It's almost draft month around here on the football side of things as well. I am wearing my Coco's Pub shirt. We're going to get back to Coco's later on in the month, too. Have a big fat crab cake over there in Lauraville. I'm going to be after those coconut shrimp. It's going to be fun. It is good to be back on the beat here and talking some baseball. All right. So on to the team itself and the pitching and the hitting. Where do you stand on all of it from the obviously the bats to me, and you and I waited, I don't know, 9 months last year for the thing to come together, never did, but I feel like they're going to hit the ball. I mean, I think there's a lot of pedigree for them to hit the ball. I do think the pitchers were hard. I Minnesota's got two top of the rotation pitchers, and then after that, nothing. I think the bullpen part of this for the Orioles beating up other teams' bullpen is going to be as much a story as other teams trying to beat up on the Orioles' bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, they need to hit. This team, this is my biggest complaint about them early last year. For as much as they had their issues pitching, none of us were surprised by that. What was surprising was how bad their offense was. So, yeah, it's not ideal when you start out what they were prior to Tyler O'Neill hitting the home run in the fourth inning. Prior to that fourth inning on Sunday, they'd started the season 11 for 70 with 25 strikeouts and only two extra base hits. You can deal with strikeouts if the slug comes with it, but they weren't slugging over the first couple of games. But certainly they came alive on Sunday. That was good to see. I don't even think, and even talking to Albernaz about it after Saturday's game, I don't think it was even a case where the at bats, like the approach was awful. It was just too much swing and miss. And we talked about it. The shadows were there. Taj Bradley's got good stuff. And guys can press coming out of the gate, right? You're excited. You want to get off to a good start. I mean, one of the things that I heard over the first week of the season, it was a absolutely dreadful Netflix season opening game, but Barry Bonds said it in the pregame. If Barry Bonds says it, it must be true. He said, no one wants to go 0 for 4 out of the gate. So there's a little bit of that that goes on. I think you saw Gunnar Henderson frustrated on Saturday, for example, but you have to think with this lineup, with the depth of the lineup, with the different options that they have. I mean, we've already seen some different lineups in place. I mean, Tyler O'Neill. He's a guy we've talked about. Is he even going to be an everyday player? Is he going to be more of a platoon guy for them with the way their lineup is currently constructed? But, we'll have questions about the bullpen. I absolutely have questions about the bullpen. Nothing's changed on that front, especially watching Sunday's game.
Well, Saturday was good. Nunez looked all right.
I'll get to him because to me, the ABS obviously was the most interesting dynamic in general. He was the most interesting development of the weekend for the Orioles, I thought. So I'll get to him, but we knew that the bullpen would have question marks at best, and we knew that the defense would have some choppiness, and we certainly saw that, and that's the best way you could characterize it. But they're going to hit, and okay, Bradish wasn't great, Boz wasn't great, they weren't horrendous or anything like that, but. You know what, as far as what we saw from this team, yeah, you're waiting for the bats to come alive, and they finally did on Sunday. And that's some really good at bats. Adley Rutschman off to a good start, big pinch hit RBI double on Sunday. Was good to see Dylan Beavers atone for losing the ball in the sun. Pete Alonso with a great approach going the other way. I mean, so there was plenty to like on that front, but it took a while for it to happen, that's for sure. And it was good to see them erase a 4-0 deficit early on Sunday when you're saying, oh, you went on opening day and suddenly you're looking at potential series loss. So it was good to see them come alive. And yeah, they did cut down on the strikeouts, 24 strikeouts over the first two games. And I think what they only had five, I think it was on Sunday. So that was a little more in line with what you're hoping to see. Not quite as much swing and miss.
I agree with you on Saturday that the shadows were a problem, but I do think aggressiveness in first pitch swinging and pitcher's ability to throw a first pitch strike,
Sure.
to be in the fourth inning with 33 pitches, you don't want that
No.
against any starter. And I mean, the game really has evolved into get into the bullpen, right? I mean, and if the starting pitcher is bad enough, you'll beat him up enough to get him out by the third or fourth inning anyway. Even if he's good, you're going to get him out in fifth or sixth. So make him work a little bit, make him throw strikes, and don't ground out the shortstop on 0-0 and first pitch swinging and reach for a ball out of the strike zone. Working counts, just working counts. There you go.
Yeah, and it wasn't even that they weren't necessarily doing that. I mean, Joe Ryan was great on opening day. I mean, he was dominant, yet they still made him throw 85 pitches and he was out in the sixth inning, right? I mean, and that was with they'd only gotten one hit and they had only walked twice against him. I mean, Taj Bradley, and let me be clear, I'm not th this isn't a cop out for them. You can't strike out 16 times like they did on Saturday, but the shadows were. It was part of the game on Saturday. It was a 4 o'clock start, right? And you're always going to have that. That said, the Twins dealt with it too, and they still managed to score four runs. So they won. Good for them. They were better on Saturday. But yeah, even Taj Bradley, who, struck out nine, threw 92 pitches in 4 1/3 innings, right? So there is that. Even if you're not getting on base, even if you're not driving in and scoring runs, at least make pitchers work, at least get the pitch count up. And we know in this day and age, I mean, we're seeing it. We're seeing even fewer and fewer pitchers throwing 100 plus pitches in games. 90 has kind of become the new 100, especially, I mean, early in the season. We'll see, but even going back the last few years, you tend to see, unless it's your stud number one and number two starters, most of these guys, like if they're at 90 pitches through six innings, unless a bullpen has really been taxed in recent games, You're generally going to see that them go to the bullpen at that point in time. I mean, that's just kind of where the game's
Man, like
heading.
pitch number one from Nunez better than like pitch 98 from any of their
No, a
starters, right?
1,000%. So it's definitely a different way. And that's why guys like me have expressed so much concern about the state of their bullpen, because who are those guys right now? Ryan Helsley for the ninth inning. Checks every box, no questions asked, right? He has two saves. Yeah, it was a little dicey. You know, he's had some traffic, but no concerns. But yeah, I mean, even opening day, okay, we saw Tyler Wells pitch the eighth, no problem. Tyler Wells in the eighth inning on Sunday was a totally different story, right? So it was great to see Rico Garcia strand the bases loaded in the seventh inning to clean up Geraldo's mess. It was great to see Yennier Cano strike out Buxton in the eighth inning and strand the bases loaded to clean up Tyler Wells's mess. But man, you don't really want to have to be doing that in game three where you're already going through your bullpen the way they did. So, but you made mention of them, and you know, this is where, yeah, the most interesting and promising development pertaining to the bullpen over the weekend. Nunez was fantastic on Saturday, and I get it. It wasn't high leverage in the sense that they were down 4-1, but that changeup and really that sweeper, that will play against lefties and righties respectively. So he's got a good arm. It's a great story. I mean, this guy's a converted infielder, right? He's only been pitching professionally for a couple years. There's a reason why Mike Elias targeted him in the Cedric Mullins trade. There's no doubt about that. And all he did was go to Norfolk last year after the trade deadline, and he pitched well there. And all he did this spring was turn heads. I get it. The Keegan Aiken injury kind of changed the circumstances for him to begin in the major league bullpen. But dude, I'm telling you what I've seen, and that's even including a couple outings I was able to watch on television, you know, in the spring with Nunez. I would not be shocked if we're seeing him pitching in some more and more important situations sooner rather than
He
later. If
might
he
be their emerging what Cano
maybe,
was 3 years ago,
maybe,
right?
or yeah, exactly. I mean, you hope, because they need more of that. There's no doubt they need more of that. I mean, it's good to see Cano do what he did. It was good to see Rico Garcia do what he did on Sunday. But generally speaking, you don't want to be in a position as they were on Sunday where their bullpen, I'm looking at the box score right now, not only did they have to cover the final 3 2/3, they also needed to throw, they threw 103 pitches to do that. Boz threw 78 pitches. They threw 181 pitches as a staff collectively. So 103 pitches from your bullpen on Sunday, that is not a long-term sustainable formula, to say the least. So,
It
but
also
that,
means you better hit the ball in a seventh, eighth, or
yeah,
ninth inning, too.
no doubt. And they were able to do that. They were able to tack on some insurance, which was much needed. But
Yeah, if you
yeah.
don't like our bullpen, look around the league, right? I mean,
Oh, I mean, there's some good ones out there. I mean, Cleveland, I mean, look at the Guardians. One of the big reasons they've been a playoff team the last couple years, and obviously they're dealing with a different story now with the betting scandal with a couple of their former big arms. But you know, the teams that you've heard me say it for a few years now, you need a minimum of four guys that can pitch in just about any situation, right? Because you know Helsley's not going to be available for every single save situation. Even when Kittredge comes back, he's not going to be available to pitch in every single eighth inning of a close game. You need at least four dudes out there in the bullpen that you can throw out there and you know, have them face just about anyone in any situation and feel like they're going to get the job done. If you don't have that, man, your starting pitching better be exceptional, and you better hit the you know what out of the ball. So they're looking for that right now. And that's not, and you know, let me be clear. I mean, I'm not piling on Tyler Wells. He had a bad outing on Sunday. You know, he could still be and still needs to be a really important part of their bullpen. You know, Kittredge sounds like, you know, he's going to be back sooner than later. You know, I don't get the sense that there's concern that he's going to be out long term. I mean, I could see him starting a rehab assignment at Norfolk any day now. That's how close I
Next
think he
homestand, he
is.
could be here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, you know, it's not as though there aren't options out there, but man, it's just a lot of unproven, a lot of unknown. Or in Cano's case, just coming back from a bad season. You know, if Cano can be, even if he's not the 23 version, the 2024 version of Cano would go a long way towards helping this pen. Because, I mean, Helsley's got, we saw it. I mean, he threw touched 102 on opening day. I mean, the arm's there, and I think they've kind of tweaked where he is. You know, he's throwing a split now that looks legit. I think that's going to help him certainly defend himself against left-handed hitting. We're going to see how it plays out. I mean, Helsley, I think, is going to be, I think he'll be excellent, right? At the very least, he's going to be fine in the ninth inning. But man, you've got to get there. And the way they did it on Sunday is certainly not the way you want to have to do it on a nightly basis if you don't want your bullpen to be fried by Memorial Day. That's for sure.
Well, on the pitching side, and we'll talk about Boz and the contract. We'll do that, and we'll do even more on the ABS a little later on. But let's staying on the function of the team and Jackson Holliday maybe being around the corner. Jeremiah Jackson can hit the ball, right? Blaze Alexander. I think part of this, Taylor Ward with an unbelievable defensive play, I thought, in left field on a ball that could have rolled to the gap and late in the game that could have stirred the bullpen up even more. I'm trying to gauge the new guys, and I'm really trying to gauge Tyler O'Neill too, who I feel like I didn't see enough of last year to like say what, why, how, hitting bombs, being healthy, being healthy, being healthy, being healthy as we wait on Westberg and Holliday and Kittredge and all the rest of this. But you only play with the guys you have. But for me, the notion that they're these new players, and there's so many of them, as you pointed out there. By the way, Joe Enoch lost a bet with me over the weekend on text. So I got to give him a hard time. He's like, "Can you name how many of these players were on the opening day roster last year?" And I thought, well, I was sick as a dog on Friday, but I know Luke said six from last year. So I won the bet because of you. So
That's funny.
I answered six right away. He's like, "Hey, you're a genius." I'm like, "No, I'm an Oriole fan." Don't tell Katie Griggs, whatever you do. Mark Fine, I'm not really an Oriole fan. I'm a journalist. But the notion we have so many new players and trying to figure out what they are, and then trying to figure out, to your point, like the Nunez's and the Jeremiah Jack, these fringe guys to say, well, they're not Jackson Holliday, and they weren't acquired in the Grayson Rodriguez deal. But getting to know the new players, even their number, just seeing Shane Boz's blondness wearing Wild Bill Hagee and Storm Davis's jersey, just the familiarity and getting used to what their tendencies are, what kind of player Taylor Ward's going to be. I'm fascinated by all of it because it is all kind of new. All that being said, I need Adley to be Adley and Gunnar to be Gunnar, the stars to be what we've seen here in the body of work. And you mentioned Cano. He's one of the things that I think looks familiar because Shane Boz does not look familiar to me, right? I mean, Bradish looks familiar to me, but all of this has some newness where we're not on here beating him up the day after the game. We're just trying to scratch our head and say, well, Taylor Ward made a nice play out in left field. Maybe he'll be a fine left fielder. And then you see the Twins guy who couldn't throw the ball to shortstop from left field. And, Gunnar Henderson's missing cutoff guys, all this sort of spring training stuff. But there is an ebb and flow of the game for me with new players and saying, I like that Blaze Alexander guy, or finding the players you like to watch 3 games into this.
And some of that is just to let it breathe, right? You just want to watch them, right? And I mean, you mentioned Taylor Ward. I mean, Taylor Ward played a Buxton double into a triple on opening day, right? I mean, there's going to be some of that, all right? I don't expect guys to be perfect coming out of the gate. Because it isn't spring training anymore, but you want to see enough signs, right? You want to see enough promise. I mean, I'd be remiss. We're this deep into our first segment talking about, the series win. How about the defense that Kobe Mayo played at third base? For as much as we talked about that from the moment that Westberg, we know he's not going to start the season, and he's going to be on the IL. I thought Kobe Mayo played a really confident, capable third base, right? I don't expect it to be perfect, but he didn't look like someone who was bracing for the ball to be hit to him. And that's a really good sign. I think Kobe Mayo, to me, he's probably a pretty good case study as far as, what's happened to this team the last couple of years, as far as these young guys where, you have the success, you're drafted early, and you ascend through the minor leagues, and all these guys, I mean, they had nothing but success over the course of their baseball life for the most part, right? And you get to the majors in the case of Mayo, who really struggled, right? I mean, he had his cup of coffee and, bounced back and forth third base, and then settles into playing first base, has a good month of September, and then the Orioles go out and sign Pete Alonso, and you're thinking, okay, am I even going to be here come opening day or the first day of spring training? And then, Westberg's situation, Mayo's back at third base, you know, the position where the Orioles had already kind of deemed him not good enough to stay there. And, you know, so far so good, right? That's not to say he's not going to have his hiccups and issues, but he's playing with more confidence. And I think we saw that with him at the plate last September. I thought Mayo's had some good at bats here early on. So, you know, you just want to see that. You want to see guys look the part. You know, you mentioned Blaze Alexander, Jeremiah Jackson prior to mid, you know, the halfway point of Sunday's game. Jeremiah Jackson, one of the few Orioles hitting coming out of the gate. So that was good to see. So, you know, I mean, it's baseball, and even us old-time fans are certainly guilty of overreacting to the earliest of the early games. But we also know they've played three of 162 when you get through the first series. When you get through the first homestand, it's six of 162. I mean, barely a blip at this point in time. But each one of those games matters, especially in the American League East, where you could have four teams making the playoffs. I mean, that's what kind of competitiveness you're going to find in this
I think we
division each
expect
year.
that, don't we?
I mean, it's tough for me to ever expect it, but I certainly would not, it wouldn't remotely surprise me, right? I mean, I certainly expect multiple teams from the AL East to get into the playoffs, because I don't know if there's enough quality in the other divisions, you know, or at the same quality, let's say. But
Yeah, how many of those teams are capable of winning 90 games?
yeah, I mean, you know, so, but that said, you kind of think about that benchmark and you say, well, how easily can you win 90 games playing in this division, knowing you're going to be playing all those teams as often as you do? You know, you're not playing them 19 times anymore, but you still play them two home and two away series, right? I mean, so it's still a significant portion of your schedule. So with that being said, you don't want to dump games. That's why, as laborious, as much of a grind as Sunday was, when your bullpen's throwing 100 plus pitches, you better win that game, right? You don't want to throw 100 plus pitches and then you have an L next to your name that day. So that's where you look at it and say, yeah, they've got to find more consistency in their pen. Yeah, they need to find a level of defense that hopefully is closer to average than bottom 10. As far as what their defense was last year, in baseball, not just the American League, and you know, the rotation, as the season goes on, you know, I'm not nothing about Bradish. You know, his velo was down a tick late in that game. You know, nothing alarming, but you know, you want to keep an eye on it. At the same time, it was his first start, and it was 40 degree weather, right? I mean, I'm not sure you're expecting peak Kyle Bradish in that scenario. Boz on Sunday, I mean, it was a 4-run second inning. Other than that inning, he pitched pretty well. Like, you know, it spoiled the outing, there's no doubt, but at least he got into the sixth inning. So, but this rotation, I think, has the potential to be a strength for them as the year goes on, which, my goodness, when was the last time we said that about an Orioles team? I mean, we thought it might be the case for a minute with Corbin Burnes, but then you had the injuries with, you know, Bradish and, you know, Grayson Rodriguez later in the year. So you never really got to see that upside materialize in the way that you wanted it to. So, but with this rotation, if it can stay healthy, man, I'm looking forward to seeing these guys make, you know, 28 starts, 29 starts, 30 starts. You know, they're probably going to use a six-man rotation at some point in time. I mean, Drew French, we talked to him on Sunday morning, their pitching coach. He acknowledged with Kyle Bradish specifically, because Bradish, look at it. I mean, look at how many professional or major league innings he's thrown over the last 3 years. It's not a lot. So you're not necessarily expecting Kyle Bradish to throw 185 innings for them this year. They might have to back off him from time to time, skip him a couple times over the course of the season. If you have the depth to do that, that's not a problem, right? Because the idea is you're hoping that you're going to be in a position to play some more games come October. So, you know, but for the time being, win as many games as you can while acknowledging that, yeah, they're going to have some flaws. There's some question marks. There's some imperfections about this team. But you come away with a series win. You do that, even if it's not the most aesthetically pleasing over the course of the weekend. I'm good with that, right? So, you know, this team, we knew it had its imperfections, and some of those absolutely showed up over the course of the weekend. But you'll still take two out of three and be happy with it.
He's Luke Jones. I am Nestor. We're talking baseball because it's that time of the year. He'll be out at the ballpark. We will be at Fadley's near the ballpark at Lexington Market next Friday when the San Francisco Giants come to town after they go to Pittsburgh and travel off next week a little bit here, a couple games at home with the Texas Rangers. Luke will be down at the ballpark at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. If you're following along at Baltimore Positive, you'll know all of that. If you're on the WNST Tech Service, we've been doing here for about 20 years, you'll get breaking news first, including when the Orioles give a whole lot of money to a pitcher like Shane Boz. We're going to come back, talk about that and more. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore Positive.